She said she'd be right back.
Now is the fourth night without any sign of a missing woman in Fort Worth.
Tiffany Johnson's family canvassed the neighborhood tonight as the mother of the prime suspect says that she is searching for her own answers.
Keys on the car.
Investigators suspect foul play, saying Tiffany vanished under suspicious circumstances.
Phone in the grass.
Police spent most of the evening searching the nearby park area.
He said she left with another man.
So right now, you lying to me, man. Just come truthful with yourself and with me. And my family, everybody's born with a heart. It just depends on how you decide you want to use it.
This would not be happening now if they would have listened to us 10 years ago.
For nearly 3 years, Tiffany Johnson's family waited to hear these words.
We, the jury, find the defendant, Christopher Revelle, guilty.
It was a quiet Monday night in Euless, Texas, a suburb of Fort Worth with about 61,000 residents. The kind of night where most people were winding down, getting ready for bed. A night where nothing feels urgent. Until suddenly, everything does. Upstairs in a small apartment, Jessica waited. She lived there with her boyfriend and his twin sister, Tiffany. Around 8:40 p.m., Tiffany had stepped outside, just for a moment. She didn't take her shoes. She was only wearing socks. She said she'd be right back, but 20 minutes passed, then another 20, then 30 more, and she never came back. Her brother Asher went downstairs to look for her. Jessica stayed upstairs until the phone rang. It was him, and something in his voice felt off. He said Tiffany's car was still in the lot, but her keys were sitting on top of it. Her phone was lying in the grass nearby. No sign of Tiffany. No reason she would have left those things behind, and no way she would have walked off barefoot into the night. Jessica called 911. She just went downstairs, she told the dispatcher. She said she'd be right back up. Could she have gone for a drive or left with someone? The dispatcher asked. Jessica didn't hesitate. No, her keys are here. Her phone is here. She would never leave without them. Something's wrong. Are you sure she's not just outside somewhere? Jessica's voice cut through the question. We searched everywhere. She was there. Then the next minute, she was gone. This is the story of Tiffany Johnson, a young woman who walked into the night and never returned. Hello, and welcome to today's episode of Sleuthy Stories. If you're new here, this is the podcast where real-life mysteries unfold, one clue at a time. The audio for today's story has been pulled from my main YouTube channel and remastered for this podcast experience. If you'd like to see the visuals that accompany this case, head over to my YouTube channel, Sleuthy Lucy. But for now, sit back, listen closely, and let's unravel the mystery together. Thanks for being here. Hey there, and welcome in. I truly appreciate you being here. If you haven't already, go ahead and tap follow so you never miss a case. Today's story takes us to Fort Worth, Texas, and it begins with a simple promise. I'll be right back. But hours passed, then days, and still, no one saw or heard from Tiffany Johnson again. What followed was a frantic search, a desperate family, and a case that would eventually unravel something even darker. Another name. Another woman. A history no one saw coming. This is a story about patterns, about control, about two women, linked not by blood, but by the man who changed both of their lives forever. Let's get into it. It was a clear autumn night in Euless, cool, crisp, and quiet. Temperatures had dipped to a chilly 64 degrees. Monday night football was in full swing across living rooms in Texas. Tiffany Johnson and her roommate, Jessica, had not long before returned to their apartment from work. She and Jessica weren't just roommates. They were co-workers. They were friends. It was approaching 9 p.m. The city was settling in. Parents were putting kids to bed. The streets were growing still. But inside Tiffany's apartment, things were still in motion. The smell of dinner hung in the air. Tiffany had changed into a white camisole and her usual black ankle socks, comfort clothes, the kind she wore when she planned to stay in. She was in good spirits, excited for the night ahead. She was preparing dinner for her second date with someone new, Russell. By all accounts, he was kind, attentive, respectful. For the first time in a long while, Tiffany seemed genuinely hopeful about what could come next. Russell was expected to arrive soon. Tiffany moved through the kitchen she shared with her twin brother Asher and his girlfriend Jessica, chopping vegetables, exchanging laughs, and chatting as dinner came together. Then, a knock at the door. Tiffany glanced at the time. Russell? Already? She wasn't expecting him so soon. But the thought sparked a smile as she walked over to answer it. Only, it wasn't him. Standing there was someone she hadn't planned to see at all. Chris, her ex. The one she'd recently stopped seeing, barely 2 months earlier. He stood in the doorway holding a six-pack, a small bottle of liquor, and shot glasses from the corner store, grinning like it was nothing. Tiffany's heart sank, but she tried to play it off. This wasn't what she'd planned. She hesitated, then cautiously let Chris inside, calling out for Asher to come up front. But deep down, she didn't want him there. Chris and Russell couldn't cross paths. Not tonight. She and Chris had broken up, but their story wasn't cleanly finished. Now, nerves rising and the nightmare she feared inching closer, she came up with a plan. She told everyone she was heading to the store. She grabbed her keys and rushed out the front door, barefoot, not even stopping to put on shoes. She had little time and hoped to catch Russell before he arrived. Her plan was simple: meet him at the nearby Walmart, stall his arrival, and avoid an awkward confrontation. But she never made it out of the parking lot. Her car was still there, and time was passing. Too much time. Night had fallen, and Tiffany had vanished without a trace. Asher grew concerned. He went outside to look for her, and what he found made his stomach turn. Her keys, resting neatly on the roof of her car, not dropped, placed, and her phone, lying in the grass nearby. There was no sign of Tiffany. Years old, with a dimpled smile that could light up a room. That's how those who loved Tiffany Johnson remember her. Her family affectionately called her Pippi or Tiff, nicknames that reflected her warmth, playfulness, and the closeness they shared. She was at that sweet point in life where things were finally clicking into place. A new city, a steady job, her twin brother by her side, and a future she was actively, joyfully building. In the latter half of 2014, Tiffany left Iowa and moved to the Dallas-Fort Worth area to live with her twin Asher in Euless, Texas. Not long after, she landed a job at an insurance company, and for the first time, the path ahead looked clear. Even at a distance, she stayed closely tethered to home, calling her mother, Deborah Johnson, and her Aunt Janelle nearly every afternoon on her drive home around 5 p.m. They weren't just updates. They were lifelines. They were close. As she settled into Texas life, Tiffany started dating. The experience was not without hiccups, though. In 2015, after discovering she and another young woman had unknowingly been seeing the same man, the two women broke up with him, then did something unexpected. They became friendly. That woman later introduced Tiffany, now single, to her brother, Christopher Reville. They hit it off. By October 2015, Tiffany and Chris were officially together. Tiffany was really into him. According to her friends, they were a good match. They spent a lot of time together, enough that for a while they lived at Chris's mother's house. By late May or early June 2016, they moved into Asher's apartment with him. The three were grinding, finding their way through life together, one day at a time. Chris was older, well into his 30s when Tiffany was 25, and Tiffany often talked about that difference with her mother. She shared the good and the bad, the mundane and the heavy. That was her way, open, transparent, reaching out when she needed support. By August 2016, though, the relationship had begun to strain. Tiffany felt it had become too controlling. She wanted out, but wasn't quite sure how to do it. She texted her Aunt Janelle for help. How do you tell someone you need space? Janelle told her gently, just tell him you need to breathe. You need time for yourself. And Tiffany did. By late August, the relationship was over. Chris moved back to his mother's home, but letting go wasn't easy. He still came by, almost daily. Even so, Tiffany kept moving forward. She had plans for her life, her heart, her future. By October 10th, 2016, she wasn't looking back. She had a second date planned with someone new. His name was Russell. He was attentive, kind. And for the first time in a long while, she seemed genuinely excited about the future. But on that Monday night, October 10th, 2016, everything stopped. She stepped outside her apartment. Minutes later, her keys were found resting on top of her car. Her phone lay in the grass, and Tiffany was gone. When the 911 call came in, officers were quickly dispatched to the 13,900th block of Tristan Lane. It had been nearly an hour since Tiffany stepped outside, and still, no word. At 10:58 p.m., Officer Smith was on scene at the Post Oak East Apartments and immediately started taking statements. Asher was the first to speak. He explained that Tiffany's ex, Chris Reville, had come over to watch Monday Night Football. That wasn't unusual. Despite the breakup, Chris still came around, and he and Asher had stayed friendly. Asher said that Chris had texted him earlier in the day to set it up. What Chris didn't know, and what Asher hadn't realized at first, was that Tiffany had plans with someone new, Russell. He said she didn't want the two men there at the same time, and the situation clearly rattled her. When officers asked about the breakup, Asher said it had been about 2 months earlier. Did you ever see them argue? They asked. Jessica said, no more than any normal relationship. They always seemed cordial, Asher added. If they argued, it was minor. Still, Asher admitted one concern. Chris could be jealous and controlling, and sometimes it left Tiffany in tears. The questions from the officers kept coming, each one designed to peel back the layers of what had led to Tiffany's sudden disappearance. They asked Asher if he knew why the couple had broken up. Asher explained that, according to Chris, Tiffany had said she needed space to work on herself and figure things out. She just seemed to need her space, Asher repeated. But he also added that, to his understanding, the split wasn't necessarily final. It was more like a break. A breather, he said. Chris used to live here, he said. But although he may have moved out, it was clear he hadn't moved on. Asher told the officers he still came around nearly every day, popping up at the apartment like nothing had changed. It never seemed to raise red flags, at least not at first. Jessica added that, after the breakup, whenever Chris came by the apartment to hang out with Asher, Tiffany would retreat to her room and avoid him entirely. She told the officers that Tiffany did not want to be with him anymore. When officers asked if Chris had ever begged Tiffany not to end things, Jessica said, not to her knowledge. Still, both she and Asher were clear about one thing. Chris still had feelings for Tiffany. Very often when he showed up, Jessica noted, he'd ask what Tiff was doing, who she was talking to, and whether she was cheating on him. He was always concerned, always curious, maybe too curious. As the officers pressed further, Asher painted a fuller picture of his sister's shifting heart. He said the time apart might have helped Tiffany see things more clearly, maybe even realize she was better off without Chris. While she still cared about him, she was ready for something new. Things had grown too intense. He lived with her. He was jealous, controlling, sometimes even aggressive. It had all just become too much. She needed her space, Asher explained. Jessica backed that up. She told officers that near the end of September, Tiffany had met someone new, Russell, a fresh start, a spark, something light and easy. They'd met online, Jessica said. It began with casual conversations that quickly turned into something more. Tiffany felt comfortable around him. When they finally met in person just a couple of days ago, she said she went along on the date as backup, just in case. They met up at a club that prior Saturday. Jessica remembered the night vividly. She liked him. You could tell. After the club, Russell gave them a ride home. And Tiffany? She didn't want the night to end. Jessica told detectives that Russell ended up spending the night, but as far as she knew, it wasn't necessarily physical. He seemed like a real gentleman, she said. Respectful. Whatever it was enough for Tiffany to look forward to seeing him again. And that next date? It was scheduled for tonight. Jessica explained that after work earlier today, she and Tiffany had stopped at the grocery store to grab a few things for dinner. When they got home, they changed into something more comfortable, and Tiffany got to work in the kitchen, full of anticipation. She was excited, Jessica said. You could see it all over her. The two women were chatting and chopping vegetables when they heard a knock at the door. Jessica remembered Tiffany glancing at the time. Russell? Already? He's like an hour early, she said. But when she opened the door, it wasn't Russell. It was Chris. According to both Asher and Jessica, Chris showed up at the apartment not long before Tiffany vanished. It was a surprise, and not a welcome one. Jessica told investigators that neither she nor Tiff knew Chris was coming over. They were caught completely off guard. Tiff had been preparing for Russell's arrival, and suddenly, there was her ex at the door. They panicked, the detective noted in his report. Asher explained that the visit was the result of a simple miscommunication. Asher said he had no idea Tiff had invited Russell over. Jessica recalled how, after Asher came out to greet Chris, she and Tiff retreated to the kitchen in a bit of a scramble. Russell was already on his way, and now they had to figure out how to get Chris out the door. Tiff wanted him gone. Fast. According to Jessica, Chris stepped out on the balcony. She thinks for a smoke. And that's when Tiff confronted her brother. She told Asher that Russell was on his way. That having both men there would be a disaster. It was going to be awkward. It was going to blow up the night. This put Asher in a tough spot. How was he supposed to tell Chris to leave? What would he even say? Jessica said that before any of them could settle on a plan, Tiffany rushed out the door. She was trying to get ahead of Russell. Maybe meet him at the Walmart nearby or intercept him before he pulled into the complex. Jessica and Asher stayed behind, scrambling for a plan to send Chris home. Asher then joined Chris out on the balcony. From the apartment balcony, Asher and Chris watched Tiffany jog to her car, get in, back out of the space, then suddenly stop. Instead of driving off, she pulled back in. Tiff texted Asher. Her brakes weren't working. Asher told detectives he looked down and noticed a puddle beneath where the car had been, what appeared to be brake fluid. This wasn't new. Jessica and Asher both confirmed that Tiffany had been having issues with her brakes earlier that week. Her mechanic had come by just days prior to look at the car. But now, on the one night she needed everything to go right, it was happening again. Chris noticed her car troubles and went down to the parking lot. He offered to help, asked her if she wanted him to take a look. But according to Asher, Tiffany wasn't interested. He said she was clearly trying to wave Chris off, telling him to just go. Asher saw her hand gestures from above, firm, dismissive, final. While standing out in the parking lot, Tiffany sent a text to her mechanic. Russell was due to arrive any moment. She had no time left to stall, because according to Asher, Russell had just arrived. And as he approached the apartment, he spotted Chris and Tiff talking near the parking lot. Russell, trying to be polite, began to introduce himself. But Tiffany quickly shut it down. She waved him off, telling him to just go upstairs. Already familiar with the layout of the complex, Russell made his way to the apartment alone. Asher let him in. According to Asher, Russell sat down on the couch while he took a seat in a nearby chair. The two men talked casually. Asher said he did his best to entertain Russell while his sister handled the uncomfortable encounter with her ex. But something didn't feel right. To make sure things stayed cordial, Asher stepped out to the balcony and glanced down at the parking lot. Asher said their exchange seemed to be getting louder, verbally, not physically, and that raised his concern. He couldn't make out what was being said, but he noticed Tiffany using expressive hand gestures. According to Asher, her body language was clear. Just go. Just leave. Just leave already. Chris, however, just stood there. Asher watched the two of them talk for about 5 minutes before heading back inside. He didn't sense any immediate danger. Another 10 minutes passed. Curious, Asher returned to the balcony. This time, he saw Tiffany walking back from the front office building by the gate. But Chris was no longer in sight. Asher figured Chris must have stopped her again. Then, trying to be discreet, he moved quietly to the balcony's screen door. That's when he heard voices, Tiffany's and Chris's, coming from the side of the garage. The sound was faint, but familiar. They were talking beside the garage, near the grassy area. Roughly 20 minutes had passed before Chris came back upstairs, about 9:20 p.m., alone. Asher said he was surprised and immediately asked, "Where's Tiff?" Chris shrugged. He said maybe she'd been picked up by someone. Maybe the mechanic? He wasn't sure. Asher said the vibe was off. Chris was not acting normal. Then Chris turned his attention to Russell, clearly unsettled by his presence. According to Asher, Chris muttered, "This is what I expected all along." Asher tried to de-escalate the moment, telling him to keep his head up. Eventually, Chris left, with his drinks in tow. But Asher's concern was growing. He began texting his sister. No response. He called her. No response. He waited. 10 minutes. Still nothing. 15 minutes. Silence. Worried, Asher told the officers that he and Russell went downstairs together to look for her. It was about 9:45 p.m. and very dark outside. They didn't have to look long. As they reached the side of the building, they spotted something strange. Chris's white 2003 Ford Taurus backed up over the curb onto a grassy area near the back of the garage, right at the retaining wall, in an area where people normally do not park. The trunk lid and both the front and rear driver's side doors were open, and Chris was standing there, doing something behind the trunk. Asher froze, watching from a distance. He didn't feel safe approaching. So he and Russell circled back through the breezeway hoping to get a clearer view of what Chris was doing behind the building. But they were too late. When they reached the back of the building, Asher again froze in place as he watched Chris quietly shut the trunk, close the car doors, and peel away, speeding off into the night without a word. Once Chris sped off, Asher and Russell cautiously approached the spot where his car had been parked. Asher turned on the flashlight on his phone and began scanning the grass nearby. That's when he said they saw it. Some of the shot glasses Chris had with him earlier. Cigarettes. The kind that he smokes. But even more alarming was what looked like one of Tiffany's socks lying in the grass. This gave him a sinking feeling. Asher said Tiffany hadn't planned to be gone long. Her shoes were still upstairs in the apartment. Then he said, just a few feet away, he found Tiffany's cell phone. And that's when panic set in. Tiffany never went anywhere without her phone. It was always in her hand. Always. As Asher watched Chris speed out of the apartment complex, he called him multiple times. Chris did not immediately answer. Then Asher made one more call. This time, Chris answered. "You need to come back here," he told him. "This doesn't look right. At all." But Chris's response wasn't what he expected. "It sounds like you're trying to blame me for something," Chris said. Still, he promised he'd make a U-turn and come right back. As Asher turned back toward Tiffany's car, he noticed another alarming sign, her keys, sitting neatly on the roof above the driver's side door. It didn't make sense. None of it did. Chris had told Asher moments earlier that he was just around the corner, about to make a U-turn, and would be back in 5 minutes. But he never returned. So Asher kept calling. When Chris finally picked up again, he claimed he was already on Interstate 30 and said police were pulling him over, then quickly hung up. That's when Asher called Jessica. His voice was tight with panic. "Something's wrong," he told her. "Her phone and keys are here." He told her to call the police right away. Jessica did. While everyone waited for Chris to return, the officers took the opportunity to speak with Russell, the man Tiffany had been so eager to see that night. They found that his story matched Asher and Jessica's almost perfectly. He explained that a friend had dropped him off at the front gate of the apartment complex. As he made his way toward the building, he noticed Tiffany standing with someone who, he would later learn, was her ex-boyfriend, Chris. Russell said he approached calmly, ready to introduce himself, but Tiffany immediately cut him off. "No, not this guy," she said. "Just go upstairs." Already sensing the tension, Russell did as she asked. He also confirmed that Tiffany had texted him earlier, suggesting they meet at Walmart instead of the apartment. But now, after everything that had happened, it was clear to him that the Walmart plan wasn't real. It had just been a tactic to get Chris to leave. To investigators, Russell seemed genuinely puzzled, wondering why Tiffany would go to such lengths to get Chris to leave, only to disappear herself just moments after he arrived. The timeline didn't make sense. And that gnawing question, where was Tiffany, was starting to hang heavier by the second. Growing more suspicious by the minute, officers asked Asher to call Chris once again. This time, they wanted to speak with him directly. When Chris finally answered, the officers demanded he return to the apartment. But even after 30 minutes on scene, there was still no sign of him. It was now 11:30 p.m. when Chris finally returned. It had taken him 42 minutes to get back to the complex, a delay that didn't add up. According to officers, the drive from his reported location should have taken no more than 25 minutes. But by the time he arrived, 90 agonizing minutes had passed since Tiffany disappeared. When Chris pulled up, the officers immediately began questioning him. Officer Smith asked where Tiffany was. Chris said he didn't know. He claimed that when their conversation ended earlier, she had started talking to some old man about getting her brakes fixed. When asked about the nature of his relationship with Tiffany, Chris stuck to the same story Asher and Jessica had shared. Tiffany needed space, but they were still friends. He claimed he came over to hang out with Asher, and when Tiffany was having car issues, he tried to help, but she turned him down, saying her mechanic was already on the way. She said she had texted the mechanic, Chris told the officers. That's why I thought she'd left with the mechanic, he insisted. That's what I told Asher too, he said. At first, officers thought Chris's story had enough details to seem plausible. He appeared calm, cooperative, but that wouldn't last. To test his honesty, Officer Smith asked Chris why he had parked near the dumpster, despite knowing from Asher and Russell's statements that Chris had backed his car into the grassy area beside the garage. The two locations weren't remotely similar. They were separated by a considerable distance. It wasn't a simple mix-up. This was a deliberate test, meant to see if Chris would come clean. But he didn't. Chris claimed he had parked near the dumpster to clean out his car, said he'd been throwing away receipts and loose trash. The officers knew better, but they checked the dumpster anyway. When an officer checked inside the dumpster, he found no loose receipts, just sealed trash bags. Nothing that supported Chris's story. Chris had failed the test, and it only deepened the officer's suspicions. There was more. When Chris finally arrived back at the apartment, officers noticed he was sweating heavily. He claimed it was from the heat, despite the cool October air. But he was also visibly out of breath, something the officers couldn't ignore. Then Asher told them something else. Chris had changed clothes. That white undershirt he'd worn earlier under his flannel was now missing, unusual since Chris always layered one under his flannel shirts. To the officers, the red flags were piling up. They asked to search Chris's trunk. Chris agreed. One officer thought the trunk was too full to hide a body. Another officer disagreed, insisting a body could have fit, even with the items inside. Then came the final blow. Asher had mentioned that Chris told him he was pulled over on Interstate 30. But when officers checked with dispatch, there was no record of any stop that night. The inconsistencies were too many to ignore. Chris was read his Miranda rights and taken into custody. Detectives now had enough to hold him, at least for the time being. As they placed the cuffs on him, they confronted Chris with the fact that the tire marks in the grassy area matched his vehicle's tread pattern. He didn't deny it. He simply replied, "Ah, okay, all right." But as the questioning continued, something shifted. The more detectives pressed him about Tiffany, the more emotionally detached he became. He never said her name. He only referred to her as that girl. What's more, he seemed far more concerned about his car and being late for work than the fact that a young woman he once claimed to care for had vanished without a trace. It didn't sit right, not with the officers, and not with anyone watching. When detectives returned to the station, they reached out to Tiffany's mother, Deborah. What she told them would shift the investigation's tone. "Look into Chris," she said firmly. Her first instinct had gone straight to him. She never felt good about their relationship, describing Chris as jealous, controlling, and possessive. Tiffany had confided in her, saying he couldn't even handle men looking at her. She had changed her appearance just to keep the peace, wearing baggy clothes and not doing her hair as nice as she used to. Deborah had tried not to interfere, trusting her daughter's assurance, "I can handle it." But deep down, she hated the situation Tiffany was in. And now, Tiffany was missing. By 7:15 a.m. the next morning, crime scene investigators arrived at Chris's mother's home, where he'd been living. In the backyard, they made a chilling discovery. A torn black bra, a camisole matching the one Tiffany was last seen wearing, a men's silver bracelet, and a black smartwatch with a broken clasp, all found near each other in the yard. There were also shoe impressions in the dirt, The tread? A distinctive star-shaped pattern. The soles of Chris's shoes had that exact pattern. The smartwatch was also believed to belong to Chris. Asher told officers that Chris regularly wore one, and as confirmation, detectives found the watch box during a search of Chris's room at his mother's home. The circumstantial evidence was piling up, and then a neighbor added fuel to the fire. As detectives canvassed the neighborhood, they weren't just knocking on doors. They were also asking for surveillance footage from nearby homes, hoping that someone's camera had captured something useful. That's when they met a neighbor with a story to tell. She had seen Chris and Tiffany arguing. His voice was loud, aggressive. "What the hell have you got on?" she recalled him shouting. She saw Tiffany recoil and Chris reach out, grabbing her with force. But this wasn't the only time. She told detectives she had witnessed previous incidents, moments that, in hindsight, painted a disturbing pattern. The officers took her statement seriously. Combined with what they were seeing on footage and hearing from others, the picture was beginning to sharpen. And it didn't look good for Chris. Back at the scene near Asher's apartment, investigators took impressions of both the tire tracks and the footprints found in the grassy area where Tiffany's sock and phone had been discovered. The tread, again, star-shaped. A match. With all the newly discovered evidence, detectives brought Chris in for another round of questioning. When asked about the clothing in the backyard, Chris offered excuses. Maybe his mom had been doing laundry. Tiffany still had clothes at the house, he said. But the investigators weren't buying it. When the interview was over, Chris Reville was formally charged with aggravated kidnapping. Then investigators turned their attention to Chris's car, searching the interior and trunk for any trace of violence. But what they found only deepened the mystery. The trunk wasn't empty. It was packed with personal items, including a cooler. There were no visible signs of struggle. No blood, no hair, no fibers. Nothing obvious tied the vehicle to a violent crime. When they pulled his criminal record, they found a long rap sheet, aggravated assault, battery, armed robbery. Chris had only been paroled out of prison for a few months before he started dating Tiffany. But that wasn't the worst of it. When news of Tiffany's disappearance broke, it triggered a chilling sense of deja vu for one family, leading to a call no one saw coming. The woman on the line identified herself as Hadia Islam, and what she said stunned the detectives. "He did the same thing to my sister." Hadia explained that her sister, Taliba Islam, had also been in a relationship with Chris Reville. They shared a son. But back in September 2005, while she was 9 months pregnant, the couple got into an argument, and Chris punched her repeatedly in the stomach. Taliba filed a police report, but just 3 months later, in January 2006, she vanished without a trace. And back then, just like now, Chris gave the same explanation. She got into a car with another man. Now, 10 years later, he was saying the same thing about Tiffany. A chilling script, used twice. A decade apart. Two young women, both missing. Detectives couldn't ignore the parallel. Had Chris Reville followed the same sinister pattern? Not once, but twice? With this alarming discovery, Chris's version of events began to crumble. The other man's car theory wasn't just shaky. It was starting to look like a calculated lie. And the striking similarities between Tiffany's disappearance and Taliba's became a red flag too big to ignore. Next, detectives pulled the phone records. Surprisingly, Tiffany's phone held more insight than Chris's. Her texts confirmed part of Chris's story. She had reached out to a mechanic about her brakes. In the exchange, she wrote, "My brakes are leaking again." The mechanic replied, saying he could come by immediately if it was an emergency. Detectives followed up right away. Anthony confirmed he'd worked on her car just 2 days earlier, He also said he heard from her around 9 p.m. that night, but he never left his home. His wife corroborated his alibi. But then came another red flag. When investigators reviewed Chris's phone activity, something stood out. After leaving Tiffany's apartment, his phone showed him heading west. Then, at exactly 11:01 p.m., just 13 minutes after surveillance cameras captured his car leaving his mother's home, his phone went completely dark. No pings, no calls. It was either turned off or placed in airplane mode. It stayed that way for 23 minutes, and when it came back online, it pinged near his mother's home. The same location where, just days later, police would recover what was believed to be Tiffany's bra and camisole, and a smartwatch believed to belong to Chris, all found discarded in the backyard. To detectives, it was a glaring gap in time, one they believed could be critical. They suspected that those 23 unaccounted for minutes were when Chris disposed of Tiffany's body. And when they mapped out the rest of the timeline, the pieces began to fit. 9:48 p.m., Chris picks up Asher's call after speeding away from the apartment. 10:06 p.m., his car is captured on surveillance arriving at his mother's home. Inside, his parents and neighbors heard dogs barking, but Chris never entered the house, according to his mother. 10:48 p.m., Chris is seen on neighborhood surveillance leaving the area. He had stayed for 42 minutes, never stepping inside. 11:01 p.m., his phone went dark. 11:30 p.m., he returned to the apartment, taking another 42 minutes to return from a location that was 20 minutes away. Just long enough, detectives believed, for something to go terribly wrong. When detectives reviewed the text messages from Chris's phone, what they uncovered painted a disturbing picture. The messages revealed just how obsessed Chris had become with Tiffany, and just how angry he was that their relationship had ended. His tone was intense, controlling, increasingly erratic. He hadn't taken the breakup well, and now detectives believed they had a motive. On the night of October 10th, 2016, something happened that Chris couldn't accept. Tiffany was moving on, and that moment became the trigger. It pushed him to make good on a chilling threat he once made, one Tiffany had confided to her mother. If I can't have you, no one will. But there was still one major problem. They didn't have a body. Without it, proving a homicide or even confirming Tiffany's death would be a steeper legal challenge. A search party was assembled to comb the wooded area behind Chris's mother's home, the same place where pieces of Tiffany's clothing had already been discovered. The terrain was dense, rough, thick with brush and shadows. Detectives believed she was there, somewhere in those woods or close by. And their suspicions only deepened after a sharp-eyed detective noticed something unusual on Chris's tire the night she vanished. A sand burr, a prickly seed pod common in overgrown off-road areas, the kind you only pick up when you veer off the pavement into wild, untamed land. It was a small detail, but a big clue. One more sign that Chris had driven off-road that night, possibly to hide something. Volunteers joined officers in the search, each step heavy with hope, each sweep of a flashlight a prayer for answers. But no matter how hard they looked, Tiffany was nowhere to be found. After days of searching, there was still no sign of her. No remains. No definitive trace. Even so, prosecutors felt they had enough to move forward with their case. The trial against Christopher Reville began on August 12, 2019, nearly 3 years after Tiffany Johnson disappeared. Initially charged with aggravated kidnapping with intent to terrorize, the prosecution upgraded the charge to aggravated kidnapping with intent to kill, a significant shift that signaled their belief that Tiffany was not only taken, but never intended to be returned. It was the first time he'd come face to face with Tiffany's family since the night she vanished. He walked in confident, smirking, self-assured, as if he'd already won. Across the aisle, Tiffany's family fought back tears, holding on to hope and each other. And though this trial wasn't about Taliba, her family stood in silent solidarity. Because justice for Tiffany would be justice for Taliba, too. The prosecution faced a daunting task, trying a case without a body. But they argued that the totality of the evidence left no reasonable doubt. Tiffany's sock, keys, and phone were found discarded in the grass near where Chris's car had been parked. Her final text was sent at 9:14 p.m. that night. And from that moment on, no one has seen or heard from her again. Chris was the last person to see her alive. His phone was pinging in the area of the apartment complex at the exact time she disappeared. Most damning of all, Tiffany's DNA was found on the bra and camisole, confirming the items belonged to her. Shoe prints in the backyard and at the apartment matched the soles of Chris's shoes, and tire impressions in the grass matched his vehicle. A neighbor testified to seeing Chris yelling at and forcefully grabbing Tiffany on two occasions. His phone went dark for 23 crucial minutes while heading away from her apartment, before pinging back on at his mother's home. And 10 years earlier, another woman in his life, Taliba Islam, had also disappeared without a trace. Prosecutors argued that Chris's obsession, possessiveness, and inability to accept rejection fueled his actions that night. His anger over the breakup and his need for control, they said, culminated in a violent and irreversible act. They believe that after Russell went upstairs, Chris grabbed her and forced her into the trunk of his car. The defense leaned heavily on the absence of a body and direct physical evidence of violence. They noted that no blood, no hair, no fingerprints, and no DNA of Tiffany was found inside Chris's car or apartment. The texts between Tiffany and her mechanic that night suggested she was planning to meet with someone else, possibly leaving voluntarily. They also argued that Chris voluntarily spoke with police, allowed a search of his car, and maintained a consistent story, albeit one with some inconsistencies. Without a body, the defense claimed, the state's case was built on assumptions, not certainty. After deliberating for over 2 days, the jury returned on August 16, 2019, just after 10 a.m., with a verdict.
We, the jury, find the defendant, Christopher Reville,
guilty. Chris Reville was convicted of aggravated kidnapping with intent to kill and sentenced to life in prison with the possibility of parole in 2046. Despite the absence of a body, the jury agreed with prosecutors. The evidence was overwhelming, and Tiffany was never coming back. At sentencing, the courtroom told a different story than the trial had. There were no divided sides, only a united front of two grieving families, Tiffany Johnson's and Taliba Islam's. Bound by shared pain and a decade of unanswered questions, they sat together, hoping the moment would finally bring a measure of justice. Even the jurors lingered after their duty was done. They were deeply invested. When they learned of Taliba's disappearance, a detail the court had barred during trial, they felt a deep sense of validation. Their verdict hadn't just spoken for one woman. It had spoken for two. Taliba's family believed that if someone had listened, truly listened, to Taliba's story 10 years earlier, Tiffany might still be alive today.
I was shocked. But then I heard that it was for kidnapping, so it scared me because he did it again.
So when the life sentence was read aloud, both families rose to their feet, cheering through tears. For Taliba's loved ones, it was their long-awaited sliver of justice, just as it was for Tiffany's family. Then, in a stunning turn, March 2023 brought long-awaited answers. 17 years after she vanished, Taliba Islam's remains were discovered near a set of railroad tracks in southeast Fort Worth in the Stop 6 neighborhood, confirming what her family had feared all along. but Tiffany Johnson is still missing. Tiffany's brother is convinced that Christopher Reville is a serial predator, possibly even a serial killer. And those closest to both victims say the patterns are too strong to ignore. Today, Tiffany's friends, family, and a devoted group of volunteers continue the search. Through an active Facebook group, they organize ground efforts, share tips, and keep Tiffany's name alive. They believe that Chris likely repeated what had worked for him before. That's why some are convinced that Tiffany's remains may not be far from where Taliba was ultimately found. They haven't given up. And until Tiffany is brought home, they won't. What do you think about this tragic case? Tiffany Johnson's case forces us to confront the agony of not knowing. Her case is also a stark reminder of how crucial it is to believe patterns, not promises, especially when history has already spoken through another missing woman, Taliba Islam. Tiffany's family lives in a limbo few can imagine, caught between justice and the painful truth that her body has never been found.
Same hurt we've been through, and it's hard to describe until you go through it, and I pray to God no one ever has to do that again, but it won't with him. He's right where he needs to be.
And while Chris Reville was convicted, the wound remains open. Was it a failure of the system, a case of missed warnings, or the dangerous pattern of a man who should have been stopped long ago?
It's not the kid that I know. What I looked at today was a totally different person. I said, Chris, talk to me. Tell me your side. Tell me what you want to tell me. He looked at me. He hung up the phone, banged on the door, and walked right out. This is my child. You understand what I'm saying? This is my kid. It's my kid. My heart, it goes out to you. My heart is broken.
Let's continue the conversation down in the comments section below. As always, I'll meet you there. Even though the perpetrator is behind bars and the trial has come and gone, until Tiffany is brought home, her story can't be closed. Her body and the full truth are still unanswered. Her family can't grieve fully. Her friends can't find peace. And for now, this case remains unfinished. That wraps up this episode of Sleuthy Stories. Thanks for joining me as we uncover the twists and turns of real-life cases. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have a moment, please leave a rating. It really helps more true crime fans find us. Want to see the visuals that go with today's case? You can find the full video version on my YouTube channel, Sleuthy Lucy. Check the link in the description. I'll be back soon with another case. But until then, keep your wits sharp and your curiosity sharper.